Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you on a dreary Tuesday in Nashville. And Titans fans, I'm sure you've heard the old phrase, misery loves company. Well, good news. There are two other teams that are just as miserable as the Tennessee Titans, because the two remaining winless teams are still winless after losing on Monday Night Football. The Jacksonville Jaguars were absolutely walloped by the Buffalo Bills 47-10. Last night. It was 34-3 at halftime. So the Bills could have played their backups in the second half, and
I couldn't believe
had
that.
had no issues.
That was an embarrassment.
And then in addition, the Cincinnati Bengals are now also 0-3 after losing 38-33 to the Washington Commanders in Cincinnati. Jaden Daniels had a spectacular game, and we'll talk about that. But I know there's not a lot to like about what you've seen from the Tennessee Titans so far this season, but if you are looking for some sort of solace, at least your team is 0-3 and not paying its quarterback an average of $55 million per season as the Jacksonville Jaguars are paying Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, and it didn't look good for Trevor Lawrence yesterday. Overthrown passes, didn't look comfortable in the pocket. It looks as if he's regressed as a quarterback. His decision making isn't his decision making isn't where it needs to be. Considering, you know what, this is his third year in the NFL. This is his second year within that offense. I think Doug Peterson is a good play caller and a good head coach. But for some reason, they can't put it all together offensively, nor can they put it together defensively. So it's just surprising to see Jacksonville, after they've given Trevor Lawrence the mega contract, they can't seem to get over the hump or get out of their own way. This is a disappointing team. And I'm sure their fan base is – they got to be in the same place the Titan fan bases are. Even though they feel, based upon the pay, they got their franchise quarterback. Well, pay is one thing, play is the other. He got paid a lot of money, but he's not playing worth the money that he's been given. So, you know, that's the silver lining for Titans fans, is that Jacksonville is 0-3. Indianapolis is, what, 1-2. And Houston is 2-1. So there's still some hope, a glimmer of hope still there.
And I'm
for
supposed
Titan
to
fans.
Be the half full guy. D-Mace is over here preaching hope. I love it. I have always had the mindset, I'm not worried about exactly how many games. I've said this many times, so I'm not coming up with this after the team goes 0-3 for the record. I've been saying I'm not worried about what the one loss record is. It's more, what am I finding out about this group? Am I building a nucleus? Am I adding to a group that I can win with in the coming years? And ideally, you really have a good team when it's time to open the new stadium. And from a business standpoint, with what they're charging for PSLs, which is ridiculously high, and I don't like the concept of PSLs anyway, and I think I'm not alone in that, they better be good when they open that stadium, or they're going to have a little problem. They're going to have problems selling those PSLs to begin with. But I think step one is, regardless of whether they win 5 or 6 or 8 or surprise everybody and be that rare team that digs out of an 0-3 hole, mm-hmm. they need to be building for in the coming years. And that's really what it is. But it has great perspective on Will Levis. If you are a Dolphins fan right now, or a Jags fan, or even a Bengals fan, they've invested so heavily in these quarterbacks. At least you know if you're a Bengals fan, you know how good Joe Burrow is. But it is disappointing if you're sitting there going, man, we've got supposedly the quarterback that's supposed to lead us here, and we're still 0-3. That's a little different because getting out from under Will Levis is nothing. Really, if it doesn't work, he just joins a long, long list of quarterbacks who were given a shot and weren't the guy. If that happens, the Titans will move on to the next guy, and they will not be out an enormous investment, which is what maybe the Jags are facing right now.
SpotTrack tweeted this last night, quote, "In extending Trevor Lawrence this summer, the Jaguars turned a two-year, $31.3 million remaining contract into what is effectively a five-year, $202 million deal. Lawrence's contract covers 7 years, $306.3 million in total."
That's a lot of money for below average play. And I'm sure when they gave him the contract, they didn't think that they would be getting this type of play from Trevor Lawrence. But he has been, like Will Levis, he has been the reason why, or one of the reasons why, the Jacksonville Jaguars are 0-3. But the bad thing about them is, like you said, they paid him already. The Titans hadn't paid Will Levis. So, you know, if they choose to move on, it wouldn't be a financial hit to the organization. With all that being said, the Titans are still, you know, if you believe in, you know, a team just going on a run and putting itself back in the mix, because of what the AFC South is doing, the records within AFC South, they still have an opportunity to put themselves in a position where they're not completely out of it. And one of the reasons is they've only played one AFC game. You know, they haven't played a game within the division, and they haven't played an AFC team outside of the Jets. So that could be glass half full sort of scenario for me.
Another part of that, too, D-Mace, that I think is important is, as of today, there is no indication, and we all did an exercise mm-hmm. last night of trying to find quarterbacks who were kind of in the situation that Levis is in now, where teams sat him for a little bit and then brought him back, and we can't find very many. Just a sneak preview. We're going to go over it more in detail later. But what you said, staying in the race, being competitive enough to where, number one, you feel good about yourself on at least a few Mondays where you're like, okay, we're making progress here, but also playing a season, if you're Levis, you're getting a true evaluation, and it's not a team that is woefully out of it by midseason. Because let's use the Predators a couple years ago when they decided to sell at the deadline. But what happened was John Hines, to his credit, and the young players who got a chance to play, they were able to keep themselves in contention all the way until the end of the season. And while they didn't make the playoffs, they got to evaluate young players in games that did have some meaning. They weren't just, hey, if they win, great. If they lose, hey, I'd rather have you lose because it's going to drop you. It's going to have you in a better draft position. If you get into that mode, and then a guy plays a couple of great games at quarterback in December, and your record goes from 3-11 to 5-11, or, you know, 3-12 to 5-12
in Houston,
you know, is that a real true indication that a guy's making progress? Not as much as if you are still, hey, mathematically alive, and you win a couple games late in games that have mm-hmm. playoff implications. That's, I think, a more true reading of what you have talent-wise.
To me, here's going to be, because I think they're getting to a point, and I mean the Tennessee Titans, they're sort of at that, you know how in the movie it's like, you know, you got 10 minutes to get out of the building before the building explodes, you know, and right. You're running around and you're trying to do all this stuff, rescue people and do all this other stuff. And then you get to that critical and they're screaming, get out of there. And you finally run. They show the dramatic run and you diving through the building and the building explode. I don't know why you're not taken out because you're like 2 feet away from the building as it explodes. Right. But I brought that up because the Titans are at this critical point right now. Because if they don't win this game, I think you seriously have to sit down as a coaching staff in a front office and say, is it better for us to make the switch now and see how the season goes or stick with the quarterback no matter what? That's what they're going to – because – this season, the division, after next week, it still will be sort of winnable in a sense because you will be two to three games out from the top, you know, the top team, which is Houston. If Houston wins and say you win or lose, you're no more than, what, three games back without playing that AFC South game. So – you got to make the determination. That's why this game is the crucial game within the season. Because if you lose, you might as well stick with them, I think. If you lose this game, you might as well stick with them. Because you're not going to win the division and you're not making the playoffs. You're just not. But if you win, do you then go to Mason Rudolph? You know, because my thing is, Will Levis has shown us who he is. I'm not sure is he going to get any better. I'm not sure he make it worse. I don't think so. But he is who he is. He's a quarterback that if everything is ideal, he's good. But the minute he starts to get a little pressure or anything around him, he becomes jittery. It seems like he loses awareness of what's going on around him. I looked at Jaden Daniels yesterday, and again, I don't know if Jaden Daniels is going to be a great quarterback or not.
Let's just point out what Jaden Daniels did yesterday for the Commanders. 21 of 23 passing, 254 yards and 2 touchdowns, 12 carries for 39 yards and the touchdown. He's the only rookie in the Super Bowl era to account for more touchdowns than incompletions in a game, minimum 20 attempts, including the playoffs.
It was a stunningly good performance.
But the thing about him was, it's not because rookies have – we saw Will Levis have a great game his first game out.
Yeah, 4 touchdown passes.
Exactly. So we saw – it's not even that because he's played well all 3 games. Watch him in the pocket, the poise in the pocket. It looks as if he knows exactly what he's doing. It may not all work out. But it seems like he's the calmness within the storm out there. And he's able to run the offense the way the offense needs to be ran. Contrast that to Will Levis. He doesn't look anything close to that. And both of these guys have played the same amount of football, basically, in college and sort of in the pros. They played the same amount of football. Will's played, 8 games more because he was there last year. But when you look at both of them, they both played the same, right around the same amount of football. Jaden Daniels had 55 starts in college. I think Will Levis is right around that too. So I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, why doesn't Will Levis look like that? Because they played the same amount of football. I think Will Levis, from a arm talent standpoint, it's better than Jaden Daniels, just from an arm talent standpoint. I'm not talking about running the football and all that other stuff. He's right there with them or even better. So why is Will Levis still having these same problems? Why does he look uncomfortable in the pocket? And I understand you could throw it to, you can blame the offensive line. I get it. But even when the pocket is clean, it's not like he go from completing 20% of his passes with stuff around him, and when the pocket's clean, he's completing 75 to 80%. It's not like that. He's still having trouble even when the pocket is clean.
I was struck by something I saw yesterday in Mike Sando's weekly, I think it's called the Pick 6 column on The Athletic. And Mike Sando highlighted the turnovers that Will Levis has had, specifically the pick six and the fumble against Chicago, the fumble against the Jets, and the pick six and the fumble against the Packers. Now, Willie, you and I are both stats nerds. Mike Sando is referring to expected points added. So for those listening who may not know what that means,
yeah,
can EPA. You give us EPA? It's a very important stat for people who analyze the game. So can you give us the layman's explanation of what EPA is before I share this information?
I think it's an advanced look at what we tried to do yesterday some and try to quantify exactly how many points the Titans have given away to the opposition. And then ask yourself, how in the world are you supposed to win an NFL game in a league like that? You know, you think back to some of the most heartbreaking playoff losses the Titans have had. Ryan Tannehill's three-interception performance against the Bengals. The game against the Ravens that D-Mace was a Raven in 2008.
They lost a couple years ago to the Ravens.
Yes, and I would say too, right, the one in 2020 when there was not the whole fans, the game you played against, the 2000 game against the Ravens, when you have the catastrophic plays that lead directly to points, we've done studies on, you know, what the team's record in those games. It's not impossible, but it's your winning percentage is so low in a game where it, famously in 2000, a blocked field goal for a touchdown and a pick six. I don't care how much better you are than the other team. You're just not going to win when those things happen. You turn the ball over three times in the red zone, which they did in the game against the Ravens in 2008, where you made the big play for the Ravens catching the bomb there, and they lost a very close game there. And then Tannehill, fresh in our memory there. So EPA, I think, is designed to say, okay, let's take some plays and basically say, is this leading to victory or is this hurting your chances of winning? And Will Levis has, I mean, this is just another fancy way of saying it, but putting in perspective exactly how much he's costing them with a few of these plays. These don't even count the block punts and the other things we covered.
So the plays that Sando is referencing, the pick six and fumble against Chicago, the fumble against the Jets, and the fumble and pick six against the Packers. So he lists them chronologically.
Right. And notice he doesn't include the late game interceptions, which are piled on. It still says Will Levis has thrown X interceptions. Two of the interceptions are at the end of the game in sort of desperation mode. You can live with those, right? It's the interceptions in the context of when they happen. That's what really affects this stat.
So according to Sando, those five plays have cost the Titans a total of 31.23 expected points in games Tennessee has lost by a combined 30 points.
So that tells you everything you need to know right there.
So
how much of a hole it's digging you?
It's when you are a team like the Tennessee Titans where, listen, you don't have this explosive offense or you don't have this defense that's going to only allow 10 points a game. Everything you do opposite of that diminishes your chances of winning. So when you have – and again, this didn't even – bring up the block punts and stuff like, you know, things that
the
were
Jeffrey
happening.
Jeffrey Simmons pull and shoot penalty,
which
led, to, know, a
led to a touchdown.
So there's even more EPA in there.
Exactly.
Than I think if you did a full EPA,
yeah. So it's
brutal.
You know, it's what are you doing to either help win football games or what are you doing to lose the football game? And the Tennessee Titans, namely the offense, their quarterback, has cost them, based upon the EPA, have cost them basically each and every game that they've had.
So by game, the two turnovers against the Bears, according to Mike Sando, those two turnovers cost the Titans 12.5 expected points in a 7-point defeat. Against the Jets, the fumble cost the Titans 4.6 points in a 7-point setback. And the two turnovers against the Packers cost the Titans 14.2 points in a 16-point loss. So even if Will Levis did not directly contribute to the loss the way he did in Chicago, the giveaways he had against the Jets and the Packers were a significant part of why the Titans lost those games. Which you don't need fancy stats to know, but it is cool to see the numbers.
But
I don't know if cool is the right word, but that's the first thing that came to mind.
That right there tells me, and it should tell everybody else, that your team is not good enough to bear. They're not even good enough to win when you don't have these turnovers. But when you have these turnovers, you're damn sure not good enough to win moving forward. So you either have to play flawless football each and every game, and we know that's not the case. That's not going to happen. Or you just hope your defense starts to get turnovers. Because if your defense doesn't get turnovers based upon this EPA, and if the trend keeps going, you will not win a damn game this season. I'm just going by the EPA and the trend. Because you're not a good enough team to overcome two turnovers or 10 points off those turnovers. You're just not good enough. Now, if you don't turn the ball over, then okay, you have a shot. But if you turn the ball over and you're not getting any turnovers, you have no shot at winning because you're not good enough.
By the way, the Dolphins might be starting their third-string quarterback on Monday. We know that Tua is out. Skylar Thompson, his backup, suffered a rib injury last week, and Tim Boyle, their third-string quarterback, had to come in relief. And I guess we'll see what happens with Skylar Thompson this week. But Tim Boyle, third-string quarterback Tim Boyle, might be starting against the Tennessee Titans for the Miami Dolphins next week. And if the Titans can't defeat Tim Boyle, say what you will about them losing to Malik Willis, if the Titans can't beat a third-string quarterback, which Malik Willis was not too long ago, then we might have some issues.
Tim Boyle has started 5 games in his career. He has played for 5 teams, and he's 0-5. So he's got the profile of your typical veteran third-string quarterback. Yikes.
Okay, I'm looking for something here.
And if you're thinking, where did he play college? The answer is UConn and Eastern Kentucky.
So this tells you, what do you think the line is for the game? Don't even look. What do you think the line is for the game right now? Right now. It's in Miami, Monday night, third-string quarterback.
A pick'em.
I would say Dolphins by 1.
I say Titans by 3.5.
+1 Dolphins, which means even at home, you're only favored by a point. And it's really a pick'em. At home, Miami's at home with a third-string quarterback, and you're only at this point in time. Now, I know the line can change before we get to Monday, but at this point, you are only a one-point favorite against a third-string quarterback. What does that tell you what people think about the Tennessee Titans right now? That tells me I don't believe, even with the third-string quarterback, and we don't even know who the third-string quarterback is, I don't believe you're good. I believe you're just barely good enough to win against a third-string quarterback.
Don't forget about Tyler Huntley, by the way. Dolphins have him on the practice squad.
Yeah, but will he play?
I mean, I think he's better than Tim Boyle. I wouldn't be surprised. Elevate him.
Could be. But then if Huntley plays, I think Vegas will then make Miami a one-point favorite. But still.
Well, I think the theme
that tells you what they think about your team.
But it's an opportunity for the Titans.
It's not really an opportunity, Willie, based upon Vegas.
Well, that they have not taken advantage of, right? I think what would be just, really tough to stomach is that you will have, a game you're up 17-0 and handed away to a team that's probably still not there. The Bears don't look like they're going to get there this year, right? They've got a lot of problems. They've struggled in the games since they played the Titans. The Titans made them look good by handing them a game that they were up 17-0. You have that game. You have a Jets game that you certainly did a ton to shoot yourself in the foot. Still felt like you could have won. And then 2 consecutive games where teams have really tough quarterback situations. If you can't take advantage of that, that would be very tough to stomach.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, our friend Tim Hasselbeck will join us. We'll get his thoughts on all of the quarterbacking around the NFL. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason with Adam Vingan. And joining us on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, our friend Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, we opened the show discussing the other 0-3 teams in the NFL, the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Cincinnati Bengals. And from afar, I am shocked by what I have seen from Trevor Lawrence through three games. I suppose the simple question is, what's going on in Jacksonville, specifically with their $55 million per year quarterback?
Yeah, I think he's not playing well. I think, he's missed throws and he's made decisions that you wouldn't expect out of somebody that was drafted when he was drafted and invested in the way that he's been invested in. And, I think I definitely, I had a number of his games in college. So I just, remember watching him then, feeling like he was a great prospect. Feeling like his first year in the NFL, you kind of had to throw away because of the environment there in Jacksonville, what he was exposed to. And I think it's been a bit of a head scratcher in terms of what we've seen from him since. So I do think there are better days ahead for him because I think that he's kind of, mentally made of the right stuff in terms of being able to weather the storm of the adversity. And I guess, the slump of kind of how he's played. But he needs to start to do it, right? A little bit of some of the stuff that we've talked about with Will Levis in terms of, I think the conversation last week was rewiring your brain to make good decisions, in critical moments. I think a similar thing has to happen with Trevor.
Tim, let's focus on the Titans. This past Sunday, Malik Willis had the best game of his young NFL career at Nissan Stadium as the Packers defeat the Titans 30-14. I think there are a lot of Titans fans that see what Malik Willis was able to do and view it as an indictment of the development that, or lack thereof, that the Titans were unable to get out of Malik Willis. In your opinion, how much should, if at all, Malik Willis's performance on Sunday against the Titans reflect on the Titans' player development?
Yeah, I think in some ways that's unfair. And I say that because, just look at the current group, right? You have a brand new coaching staff this year. And so when you come in, everybody was completely on board with, okay, the starting quarterback is going to be Will Levis this year. That's how we enter in with that expectation, right? Well, there's only so many reps. And then you also make a decision all right, well, we're not going to go into this season with Will Levis and then another young, inexperienced quarterback. And so you go out and you sign Mason Rudolph. And so while we can talk competition and player development and all that stuff, the reality is the decision was made. And that's not unique to the Titans. That's the same case, pretty much everywhere. I've used the Giants as a, somewhat of a comp, in terms of the quarterback situation, because Daniel Jones is going to be their quarterback. So he just is. That decision is made. He's not competing for the job. He's going to be their quarterback. And then the backup quarterback is going to be Drew Locke. They signed him for a reason. Tommy DeVito, is not competing with him for that spot. And so, I think that, when you look at player development and competition, unfortunately, the way it works in the National Football League sometimes is the decision is just made. And that's not an indictment on player development. That's just the reality of reps and time that you have to get people ready. So, could you say, but do you want to keep, Malik Willis on the roster? Sure. But I think there are a lot of people, probably myself included, that were surprised and impressed that you even got anything in return when you traded him. To me, I think the rest of the league probably would have looked at Malik Willis as a camp, casualty and a street free agent. So I think in some ways that's unfair. Now, saying all of that, is it a bad look and does it hurt to lose to Malik Willis? Yeah, of course it does. But I do think that there's like another side of that coin.
We'll talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and head coach of the Innsworth Tigers. Congratulations, Tim, on another victory this past week.
5-0 Innsworth Tigers, teammates. The 5-0 Innsworth Tigers.
Oh, excuse me. The 5-0 once again Innsworth Tigers. They could possibly just be the best team in the state of Tennessee. But looking at Will Levis, Tim, why do you – is it just – the offensive line issue, or is it a Will Levis issue? Because it still seems like he has trouble processing fast enough to consistently play at a level that he needs to play at in order for this team to win. It seems like when you're watching film, and I know it's different from a quarterback, you know, it's like, sort of like hindsight, but when you're watching the film, it just seems like either he doesn't trust himself to throw some of those short passes, mm-hmm. or he's just not processing it quick enough and not seeing it.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both things in terms of that. And I think that I don't think it's fair to say that the offensive line, you know, and or protection in general is a problem. But I do think, like, I'll give you a good example. Sam Darnold. Mm-hmm. Well, Sam Darnold's thrown 8 touchdown passes this year. He's played really, really well. If you watch this past weekend, like, they did an incredible job protecting him. And so if you wonder, like, man, why is Sam Darnold playing so much better? It's like, well, look, no one has ever doubted that Sam Darnold could make the throws. But he's just probably been in some environments that weren't great. And so it's helped him play really well so far. And so I think that that's always the case with all of these quarterbacks. I really do. Like, across the board, I think when you look at them and you look at, like, is there a true pocket? Is there space between, you know, the quarterback and like, there's pretty much everyone in the league, like, can make the throws. Mm-hmm. So I do think, like, the better that you can be at that, then, yeah, I think that it helps the processing. It helps seeing it clearly. It helps all of that stuff. So that can always be better. Now, I do think that then there's this other side of it, which is, okay, when it's not perfect and it is in your lap a little bit as a quarterback and you do have to speed up your decision and you do have to trust, okay, it's not there and so the ball's got to go here and this has got to be the clock in my head timing. Are there guys that are doing that at a high level that are masking protection issues? Yeah, 1,000% they are. And Will Levis just isn't at that point right now. He's not. And so I think trying to get him to play a little bit more like Kirk Cousins than like, somebody that's trying to create, I think that's the right way to coach him.
Because I look at the example of you brought up Darnold, but I look at Dalton and Young, what's going on in Carolina. Yeah. It was a garbage show. With Young, but then you put Andy Dalton in under the same sort of situations, and it looks better. So what it tells me is not – even though the line isn't great, mm-hmm. it's really the quarterback and his ability to either not see the field or process it fast enough, because you bring in a veteran guy who's working under the same circumstances, but he manages to get the most out of that circumstance. And that's why I look at Will Levis and – I'm starting to think, like, listen, it ain't just the offensive line. It's him as well.
Yeah. No, I think that there's two elements, I think, of playing quarterback that don't really get talked about, but they're a way bigger deal. So the number one thing is, like, you got to be a traffic cop as a quarterback. And so what I mean by that is, like, so you always have it. And you know this, D-Mace. Like, you always have guys, like, as you break the huddle – it's like, what's it on? Wait, did you say slot? Or, like, where am I lined up? Like, what? Like, and so as a quarterback, like, you have to control the environment of, like, making sure that everybody knows what to do. So, like, you're a traffic cop. Like, you got young players, and it's like, hey, no, I actually want you to tighten your split down just 2 yards, because, like, it's going to make a difference in our spacing. And so I think, like, there's that element, like, that never makes SportsCenter in terms of a highlight or something like that. But it can be the difference of converting on third down and not. So, like, you got to be a traffic cop. The other thing you are as a quarterback is you're an eraser. And so when your left guard gets beat and it should be a negative play, but you just know where your outlet is, and so now you throw a check down for 2 yards, or you're able to, you know, play on time enough where the ball gets away and it's an incomplete pass, but it's not a negative play. Like, you being an eraser has just made your offense better. And so I think Andy Dalton is like the perfect example of that, of, you know, obviously he has the experience and the wisdom of playing, but like, he's a great traffic cop, and then he's a great eraser. Yeah. Like, he is.
Sounds like Levis, you know, those are two areas, if he could grow in, that could help him in a lot of ways. Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Tim, one thing that we haven't discussed a lot, and it's early, but it's one thing that is starting to maybe have people asking the question. With Brian Callahan as a first-year young head coach and a first-time play caller, calling plays from the sideline where his perspective in the past has been in the press box, you know, I think I probably am one that probably didn't think about how much that is on a first-year guy's plate as a change. I think he's dealt with it pretty well so far, but it is a lot, and it makes me wonder how difficult that job is.
Yeah, I'm sure it's really hard. Somebody is relying heavily on.
Are you talking from experience, head coach?
My 5 games of experience, I can tell you that, I mean, look, I'm not calling the plays, and it is a huge benefit to not be calling the plays. It's a huge benefit to be able to trust somebody that is calling the plays, right? And so, yeah, there's no question it's a lot. Now, I just guarantee with the guys that he has on his staff that he's getting, you know, incredible support. I think this too, and this is where it gets really tricky. If Will Levis doesn't make 2 really bad decisions, and if punt protection is better, well, like, you're talking about 2 wins. And so, you know, I think that there's part of it where it's like, you can look at him and look at Brian Callahan and be like, oh, you know, they're struggling, and the quarterback, and like, oh, hey, this is really bad. And it's like, honestly, like, maybe he's actually been doing a pretty good job. And like, there's a couple of these things that have happened that, like, I don't care if it was Vince Lombardi, like, right. Like, honestly, like, those are 2 wins.
Yeah, and even you could point to just a couple of plays in the Packers game that they go different. You're at least in the game. Let me throw this at you, too, because we did a study last night. We went back through, the three of us, it was a kind of our homework assignment, and tried to find situations.
Well, hold on a second. So 2 of the 3 of you did it, because there's no way D-Mace.
Well,
D-Mace
has come up. D-Mace had the hypothesis, I would say, right?
I had the thought, Willie, because they are the number guys, I'm not getting to the numbers that fast. Before I can even think about it, either Willie or Adam has the numbers.
Okay, so here we go. Here's the D-Mace
hypothesis. Somebody works at Michigan State. Somebody's going to take care of that for me.
So the D-Mace hypothesis is in the – and I think I asked you a hypothetical like this last week of is there merit to the idea of, okay, slow it down for Will Levis, get off the ride for a couple weeks, and then we'll find a way to get you back on the ride, and hopefully you'll have a reset. This happens in other sports, right? Guys get sent to the minors in baseball. Guys in hockey get sent to the minors, and that's what you don't have in football. But it works there. That's how you develop guys, and they go through a process, and eventually you find out if the guy can play. But we had a hard – D-Mace's point is, once you go away from a guy, you almost never go back to that guy. And history has shown that that's pretty much true. There aren't that many examples of my thought of get off the ride and we'll find the next entry point somewhere down the road to get you back in there. It doesn't happen very much unless it's with another team.
Correct. And I think that part of it, too, is, you know, the message to the locker room of like, hey, do we believe in and trust this guy? I think the other thing is, too, is like back to the Andy Dalton situation. the better that went for Andy Dalton, the worse that it appeared to be for Bryce Young, right? So it's like, hey, we still believe in you, but we just want you to come stand next to me on the sideline for a little bit, take a couple breaths, and like, let's just watch it. And then that guy goes in and plays great, and you're like, oh, okay, wait a minute, like maybe it was you, right? Like that's also the risk in it. Like, so look, they just played out with the Titans. What if they say, a couple of bad decisions. Hey, just this isn't for good. There's going to be a reentry point, but we just need you to like come hang over here for a little bit, take a breath, recalibrate. And then Mason Rudolph goes in and starts lighting things up. Like now there's no reentry point, right? And so I think that, like, I think that there just has to be some caution because of that.
Tim, if you have any homework you would like to assign Derek, by all means.
I mean,
I'm done doing homework.
D-Mace doing homework. Like,
my days of doing homework ended the day I left college.
I can picture him at a Pilates class before I can picture him doing homework.
Tim has
that's part of the homework, Pilates, okay?
It's part of his PE homework. Tim Hasselbeck joining us as he does every Tuesday. Tim, thanks for chatting. We'll talk next week.
All right, see you guys.
Yep.
Tim Hasselbeck joining us as he does every Tuesday at 11:30. 615-737-1025. We will react to what Tim had to say, but specifically one thing that Willie asked him about. I'd like to talk about that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, The Game. Join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, and Derek Mason at Twin Peaks in Madison at 2151 Gallatin Pike North for a Monday Night Football edition of the pregame show from 4 to 6 p.m. They will break down the Titans' Week 4 matchup against the Miami Dolphins and give you the latest updates before the game. The pregame show is presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment, Sundeck Nashville, Sloan's Motorcycle ATV, an award-winning Blue Note Juke Joint and Blue Note Crossroads Bourbon. Willie Donick, Derek Mason with Adam Vingan here. We were just talking to Tim Hasselbeck. Willie, you asked a question of Tim, and we received a text on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com to a similar effect from Justin in Greenbrier, who writes, "In all seriousness, I know that he is new and is trying to adjust to all of that new. Should Brian Callahan hand over the play calling to Nick Holtz if they lose Monday? They have the bye week to work on the change, but that takes the pressure off of Callahan."
I think if you're 0-4 and you can't beat the Dolphins with their quarterback situation, even though the Dolphins still have a lot of good players, probably more dynamic players. It's not probably, it's a fact. They still have more high-end players than the Titans do, and you got to go down there. But if you're 0-4, I think you have to look at everything. I would say, though, D-Mace, in the big picture, his mentor is a guy that does what Callahan is doing now, and that's the head coach of the Bengals. The 0-3 Bengals, by the way. That's an issue. But this guy, this guy has proven that it can be done. I just think it's an interesting situation for a new head coach and a struggling team. It's a guy that there's a lot to like about. There's a lot to like about Brian Callahan, but that is an awful lot of workload for a first-year guy. He has had to deal with a ton. And some things are completely out of his control. You can't coach a right tackle that just falls down or two punts blocked. That's I don't think that's coaching. That's just like, wow, how could that – that's a tough hand to be dealt.
Yeah, it is. And I'm not – and I don't think we are saying in regards to Brian Callahan that he should no longer be the play caller. You're not saying that, right, Willie?
I'm not saying he should scrap it right
now. Yeah, exactly.
I think this is, again, I have the perspective, and I think the Titans probably should have couched this a little better. I think this is an exploratory year. It's a rebuilding team. I think you take a full season, mm-hmm. to sort some of this stuff out, and you evaluate these things maybe at the end of the season and not after three games, where Jared Stillman yesterday, it was Armageddon panic button. I'm glad Jared is not my crisis management coach. But when you're in the storm, you have to buckle down, right? You can't just hit the panic button. But I think you try to sort through questions like this.
Yeah, you're going to have to. And this is something that Brian Callahan, because listen, he has a lot on his plate. I don't envy him not one bit. That's why some of the things he's doing, you know, he gets a pass in a sense. We gave Vrabel a pass his first year, some of the bonehead things he did as a head coach. Why? Because he was a first-year head coach, feeling his way through things. And I'm sure he would tell you, man, I did some things my first year that, goodness gracious, I'm glad we made it through. And I'm glad I didn't get fired. But he was better off the second year because of that. That's how I look at Brian Callahan is I am not going to jump on him because he decided to – now, it was odd. But I'm not going to really get on him because he decided to not go for it. But then it seems like the fans started to
burn a timeout.
He burns a timeout and then he goes for it.
Right. But burning a timeout is a penalty against your team, even if you get it, because when you're coming from behind, that is a very valuable.
You need that timeout. Golden, you may need that timeout.
Mike Vrabel used to call it the golden ticket, right? Those three timeouts are golden, and to lose one in the first possession of the second half, that's a big price to pay.
But I'm not going to fault him. Like, I'm not going to, like, really get on him for doing that. He's a first-year head coach that goes along with the process. But I think there's going to come a time, I believe, like Zach Taylor did as well. You got to understand, his first two seasons were not good whatsoever.
They were 1-10 to start.
But eventually they got it right. They stuck with the process. He remained the play caller, and look at what, you know, they are as an offense. Now, I know they're 0-3, but that's still a damn good offense. Maybe, just maybe, you know, for Brian Callahan, I'm not saying that some of that responsibility should be taken away, but I'm not going to, you know, fault him for mistakes that he makes, you know, this year, whether it be play calling or calling for, you know, a punt, but then calling a timeout and going for it and still not making it. Those are first-year head coaches' mistakes. I guarantee you, Ryan made them in Houston. They've made everywhere. So I'm not going to hold him to that and penalize him greatly for it. But it's going to have to get better moving forward. The play calling, the way the offense runs, it's going to have to get better, because if it doesn't, then that's when, you know, based on what we've seen from Amy, she can make a decision very quickly at a drop of a dime. And I'm not saying she's making it this year or next year, but if nothing changes, there's a possibility that she will.
615-737-1025. We'll continue the conversation next. Tune in to the Chase and Big Joe Show tomorrow from 9 to 11 a.m. for your chance to win all-inclusive tickets in the Eurostone Club to WWE Friday Night SmackDown at Bridgestone Arena on Friday, October 4th. Contest presented by Green Trees, a family-owned cannabis company and dispensary providing high-quality legal THC products. Check them out online at greentreescompany.com.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.